the youngest, you know, what they would call a hitman. You know what I mean? I really was taking life for money, sad to say, of my own people. That was all I knew. Like I said, from 2 weeks old, my father was gone, so I didn't know a father, right? Aunts and uncles all already getting high, so I didn't know a sober aunt or uncle. Mm. Mother already hooked on drugs. I didn't know a sober mother. I'm thinking that the woman's so traumatized, seeing three young men she watched as kids grow up, have their heads blown off in broad daylight. It took a toll on her. We got a lot of stretch clips and a lot of military guns, a lot of AR-15s, a lot of AKs. It's hard to get handguns now. The fixation with guns, the movies, the, you know, the sound, the grip, the power.
Boom! Here we go for another Crash Out Chronicle. And it's another intense episode, hot episode, with an interview I did with Tyree Colleone Moorhead, a guy from Baltimore, Maryland, in 2018. Now, Tyree Colleone was, as he admits in the interview, a killer, committed murder by 15, and was sentenced to prison. He came out later, and as he talks about in the interview, became an anti-violence activist who painted up no shoot zones around Baltimore, Maryland, try to stop shootings. And that was the time I interviewed him about this project and about his life as well. Now, what makes this even hotter, more intense, sadder, is that in 2022, Colleone was himself shot dead by a police officer. He was assaulting a woman and he had a knife drawn. The police officer told him to drop the knife and he didn't, and so he shot him multiple times. There was a certain kickback from his family. There was certain kickback from community leaders about police violence in this case. But it didn't turn into a George Floyd type case. It didn't turn into big protests because he was clearly assaulting a woman with a knife drawn. The police officer in that case was not charged. Family said there was a mental health episode that he had in this time that he killed, that he was killed. So that makes it more controversial, made me hesitant about releasing this interview that I had done. But I think it is a good interview to get out to the public about who is this guy, what's going on in his mind. I know some people will be like, well, we don't want to know, this guy was a killer. But I think he does admit his own violence and make some interesting points or give some interesting stories about violence in Baltimore, violence in urban America. So here it is. Check it out, the interview with Tyree Colleone Moorhead.
Tyree. They call me Colleone, birth name Tyree Moorhead.
Tyree Moorhead.
Mm-hmm.
Colleone.
Yeah. Colion, not like the Godfather, not like Corleone.
Yeah.
Colleone. It's a little prison name I got. I was a little badass in there, so, you know, they gave me that tag.
So, you were born here in Baltimore, yeah?
Yes, sir. Born and raised in Baltimore.
How old are you now?
I'm 42. You know, I was born 2/26/76. Mother named Tammy Hurst, father named Colton Moorhead. You know, I was born into a life of, immediately wake up. This is who you are. This is where you are. You know, at 2 weeks, my father was arrested for, they said he robbed a cab driver and killed him. And he went away for 15 years. And I met him when I was 15. I met my father in prison. You know, so to say the least, that's how it started. 2 weeks old, father gone. Then my mother, from the time I can remember, was on heroin. You know, she shot drugs. My immediate aunts and uncles did drugs also. Only they ain't shoot. Only one of my uncles shot drugs. Once, two sniffed, one smoked coke. So it was all here. It's all there.
Do you have many brothers and sisters?
I was the only child.
Only child, okay.
Yeah. A lot of little cousins, though. A lot of little cousins I end up raising because their aunts, because their mothers and fathers weren't really in the position to raise them, you know? So, like, about 11, I started having to raise my little cousins.
When did you first come across guns?
First time I came across a gun, I was about 11. That's when I stole a gun. Stole my aunt's boyfriend Pookie's gun. And didn't even realize that it had no bullets in it. Some guys jumped me. I ran around the neighborhood attempting to, end up losing the gun. But yeah, so didn't shoot nobody at 11, but I had my first gun at 11. I shot at someone for the first time at 13. Had the balls to run behind a car. At 13 in broad daylight.
So that gun of your auntie's gun, what kind of gun was that?
38 special, never forget it. 38 special, took five bullets. Never forget it, you know. The bullets was in another drawer that I didn't even realize they was in if I was thinking, but it wasn't meant to happen. You know, just like when I shot the second gun I had was a 38 too. It skipped though.
And where did you get hold of that second gun?
Well, the second gun I actually purchased. I brought that. I was 13. I was already selling drugs, you know. Thought I was my own man, and I needed a gun. Guy had a gun, a little broke 38, and you know, for low, I think I bought it for like $40.
About $40 at that time. So this was going back to the late 1980s.
Well, yeah, exactly. This was around. Let me see. I was 13. This was 1989. 1989, crack epidemic just hitting, you know. I was working for a guy that, at 11, I sold my first drug. I went to a guy and I said to him, guy named Rooster, you know, may rest in peace. I said, man, can you stop serving my mother? I said, my friend's looking at me like my mother junkie and, you know, I was zapping out. So I'm like, he said, man, won't you just give it to her? I'm like, give it to her, what you mean? He's like, you can work for me, boom, boom, boom. I ended up holding the pack on the steps and taking my mother her drugs. That was the beginning of me selling drugs, you know, to make sure my mother didn't have to come outside and get it.
What did you used to sell?
Well, I held coke and dope. I held pills of heroin and...
You held them and other people sold them?
Well, when I was 11,
yeah.
What they would do is give me the pack of pills,
yeah.
And I would sit on the steps because back in 89, you can sit on the steps, police couldn't bother you. You can sit on the steps till 3, 4 in the morning. They couldn't touch you because you were juvenile. They couldn't do nothing to you.
They couldn't search you?
They couldn't search you or nothing because you were juvenile.
Oh, really?
So it was the law. They couldn't touch you.
So they gave the drugs to kids by then, yeah?
So back then, yeah, I would sit on the steps all morning. They would come to me, grab the drugs from me, serve the fiends. I would make $60 a night like clockwork, you know? So the fact that that happened, you know, I saw the fact that drugs hurt people. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the good side, too. I'm getting my little... jewelry, I'm dressing fresh, you know, everybody looking at me like, Tyree got money for a 13-year-old kid, that's amazing.
Did you still go to school back then?
Well, yeah, then I was still in school. I went up to school all the way up until the 7th grade. I was the guy in most school once I started selling drugs. I only went to school when I was fresh, had new clothes, something like that, something of that nature. But, you know, me being in school, 6th grade, I was on the run for murder. And by the 7th grade... they caught me, so I got my GED in prison. But yeah, Lombard Middle, I was on the run for murder, so on the news.
So you said the first time you shot at a guy, what was that like? What was the situation the first time you shot
it
at
was,
a guy?
I got angered enough to shoot at him because my friend, you know, was like a cousin to me. His sister had a boyfriend that was abusive, and he ran out the house and was like, you know, Chucky hit my sister or whatever, some shit like that. And I got angry real quick, and I had the gun, you know, so went out, shot it like I was trying to scare him. His car going up the street. I seen his back window bust out. It didn't hit him, but it was like it taught him a lesson. Like, yeah, take that. You feel me? And that's what I felt like I was doing. When I had the gun, it was like I was to deal with the bad people in my head. You know, in my head. Because in my world, everything was fucked up.
It was to deal with the bad, so you felt like a gun gave you power or defense, or what did it mean to you?
Well, a gun was the equalizer. I wouldn't say power because I didn't find power at that age. I didn't even find respect. I felt like it equalized it. The first time I went and stole a gun, it was because these dudes jumped me. You know, North Pulaski dudes, it was about 15 of them. I'm like, for one guy? And I remembered that Pookie had a gun. And I remembered how people respected him with his gun and everything, because I didn't know that it was because he's Pookie with that gun. It's not like it's me with the gun, you know. Like, I lost it. Got took it from me. Had no bullets, you know. Like, but, yeah, that's what was in my head, man, you know. Like, it's going to make it, I'm an equalizer. So by the time I was 15, I was literally shooting frequently, you know, between Lafayette Projects and the area we call the Boulevard. I was the youngest, you know, what they would call a hitman. You know what I mean? I really was taking life for money, sad to say, of my own people. Well, you want your neighborhood to be known as we the neighborhood of that.
Okay.
We the ones that get that in. You ain't got to go nowhere else. You come to the Boulevard, it means blood, love, violence, and death. You know we get it in. That's what it was. You know?
So, you do, like, contracts, like in Mexico they call it like sicarios, where they actually like go and that would be the same kind of thing, or would be more like
on a small level, on a smaller scale. We were kids, man. You know, we were beefing with other small scale dudes in the drug life.
And how much would you get paid for a hit back then?
I mean, it would vary. Somebody would pop up on our block and they would say, yo, I got 2 stacks. And, you know, all of us lost kids would run and say, I take it. And then I take it and I'm the best. And yeah, that's the type of situation we was in as kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the life we was in. You know, like I would come out at Lafayette Projects and literally see a New York dude on my elevator dead. They left New York dudes in the elevator shaft. Biggie Smalls' homeboy got killed while I was down there. Named 2-Tex. He wrote a song about, you know, I ain't 2-Tex, I ain't 2-Tex. He was one of the ones I seen land in the elevator shaft as a kid. You walk outside. Imagine you just walk outside daily and you like, I wonder if a body gonna be in the elevator today. That was my everyday life.
Did you get into crossfire a lot? I mean, was it normally, I mean, like going and hitting people?
Well, both times I was
did, if you hear for a second, to say, if you like this intense look into the world of Coleon, you want to check out more of my work about organized crime, drugs, violence, looking for truth, looking for understanding, looking for solutions, then check out my Substack at www.crashoutmedia.com. That's www.crashoutmedia.com. You should subscribe for free, or you can chip in to help all of this true independent journalism for just $5 a month. Get it rolling, get it moving. Back to the story now of Coleon.
Shot, it was directly for me. You know, at 15, I got into a beef out down the heights with some Jamaican dudes, and, you know, I put my, you know, let my guards down and got shot. I bucked on them. The second time I got shot was me as an adult a few years ago, bucking for the, you know, pride I thought I had. And, you know, both times it was for me. At no time have I ever shot an innocent bystander but once. And that's the charge that I paid for. Dudes misinformed me when a guy came off the elevator. His name was Larry. I never forget it because he's the guy whose life I took that I regret to this day, you know. So guys, they called me, told me that this guy took something from us, and I was the one they called to handle, even though they was all older than me, you know. They all in their 20s, I'm 15, they know I'm the one to go to. So, you know, I did. He came out the elevator shed, he was like, there you go, I shot the brother. And they was like, nah, that ain't him. And I'm like, you know? And that kind of changed my perception of it. Even though I went on a run, and even though I had a shootout with Housing Authority after that, and they said I was like Bishop and Jews and all of that, that one stuck with me, never left me.
So you were wanted for murder then? You were wanted for murder. You were still at school then, you were wanted for
I stopped then. Now this time when I found out I was wanted for murder, I was the first kid on Maryland's Most Wanted. At 15 years old, you can check the history of it. The very first episode of Maryland's Most Wanted on Fox 45, they had a kid named Tyree Moorhead. That's me. Yeah.
And the first they had it there. They said 15-year-old.
15-year-old wanted for murder of Larry. And they had his name on there, Lafayette Projects, 130 building. And I went on the run from December of 1991 into January of 1992 when Juice came out.
You remember when Juice came out?
Because that night they locked me up because I didn't have my vest and my gun on me. I was slipping. Two of the dudes set me up. You know, they told on me, you know, brought the police to me and everything.
But what, you remember Juice? You went to see the movie or something?
Yeah, the day Juice came out, I was taking all my little cousins to see the movie as a treat before I went on the run, because I was on the run. I had like $3,000 saved up, ready to go to New York. And I wanted to treat them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I go over Pennsylvania, Clifton, and I'm in the barber shop. I told my cousin needed my gun. He was like, I need my gun to go handle something. So this was God's work. And I gave him the gun, and I took my vest off, left it in his mother's house. I went to get my hair cut. By the time I finished getting my hair cut.
Took your vest off. You used to wear a
bulletproof vest, yeah, 15. Almost the whole time I was 15, I wore a bulletproof vest. Real federal issue.
And did it soak up bullets?
I never had to use it, thankfully. When I got shot, I didn't have it on. Yeah. Oh, no, when I got shot in my leg, I had it on. I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I still didn't catch no bullets in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I had it on. So, to say the least, man, that was, you know, it's funny looking back at it now, because, like, yo, damn, I did that. Like, this was me at the fucking kid, man. This was my everyday fucking life.
Yeah.
Shooting and motherfuckers getting high and getting shot. And
what was it? What were you feeling like? I mean, when you look back now, I mean, what was it? What were you feeling like on the inside there? I mean,
back then it was another world. It was like I was in a whole nother atmosphere. It was like I didn't see everything else. I tell you, like when I was in the cut, I said 18. I was in J-Dorm. And I didn't know about the family. I'm not scared of nobody, you know, even when I found out. But it was an invisible thing going on that I didn't know about. And everybody was getting tougher. And I'm looking at dudes walking together from east and west. And what the fuck? And it was a whole invisible world that I didn't know that was forming as a gang that ended up being BGF. But I didn't see it. You see, like this now, like this world. If you don't listen to birds, right? You won't even know what they're saying. You won't care. You'll be like, oh, it's just birds chirping and shit. You listen to them enough, you'll be like, oh, these birds chirp when they get together. That must be like a mating chirp. This bird chirps when he's eating like this. And you pay attention. It's a whole different world. Fish, if you don't go in the water and look at them swimming while they're in the water, they're not out here looking at us. You won't examine their world. You know, like, I had that world of a killer. I had that world of a hustler. I didn't have that world of a civilian, of someone that wasn't a convict, until I woke up and said, now it's time to be a man and do the other thing. That's where this came into play.
Well, like, I mean, going back before we get to that, which is obviously what we hear about, but like, when you're a 15-year-old in America, and you're involved in that kind of thing, I mean, did you feel this is normal, or why have I got this life?
It was all I knew. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to compare it to a better life.
Did you even question it in your own mind? How come I'm doing this? I mean, because like other people might see that stuff on movies.
Right.
But they don't live that.
What I never got like? A chance to see it on a movie first. I lived it first. And when I seen it on a movie, I was like, that's fake. Like, I did it before I saw New Jack City. I already sold crack. You see what I'm saying? So by the time I saw New Jack City, I'm like, that shit fake. How the fuck? That ain't real. like I know how I felt to shoot a gun. I was like, look, yo, well, I got you holding that gun with one hand. It's not even, I'm comparing real life shit to the movie. So the movie didn't inspire me. I was telling them my life could have inspired the movie. You know what I'm saying? This is what I'm looking at. That was all I knew. Like I said, from 2 weeks old, my father was gone. So I didn't know a father. right? Aunts and uncles all already getting high, so I didn't know a sober aunt or uncle. Mother already hooked on drugs. I didn't know a sober mother. Grandmother drinking. May she rest in peace. Mother and grandmother, rest in peace, Gloria and Tina. I didn't know anything normal but that from birth.
What time did you get?
They gave me, see, I had the second degree murder, but I also had the attempt murder on the police. Okay. Because when they tried to lock me up for it, I shot out with the police. So what they told me is they would suspend.
That was the same day that.
Oh, not that day. No, the first time. That was the that's when they caught me. I ain't tell you about the first time. I'm sorry. Well, the first time I came to pick some money up down the 130 building, I'm basically coming down there saying, look, yo, you know, I know I'm on the run, but I need my money. And I didn't know they were all telling on me. So I come down, hit the 130 building. As soon as I hit the building, helicopter, housing authority, because this is the year housing authority first got their guns, them and MTA police. So they boxed off the building. I run up in there. I had a Glock 9mm MCM jacket on, you know, like still fresh while I was a badass. You know what I mean? I make sure I stay fresh. This is why I didn't like Nino. I said, it's some phony shit. All right, so I ran in the building, made it up to the fifth floor, came across. Now, by the time I got up to the 10th floor, I lost them. They left. They come back in, pull the car, first car pulled straight in. He would have got me, so I shoot out the window at him. All the bullets went through the top of his roof. Right. Basically, he pulled off. I runs out the 10th floor, run back down to the 7th floor, because we had different houses we can run in. That's why they tore down the high rise. The high rise, you will never get caught. Unless they come in every single house, because no one's going to tell. They don't know what floor you're on, and they literally don't know what house you're in. So, you know, that's why they took the high rise from us, man. We was masters of the high rise. But I'm bouncing around houses. But this particular time, you had this one officer that thought he was, you know, a badass. He didn't even see my gun when he shot at me. That's what makes me so angry. He wanted to kill me before he saw my gun. So by the time he saw my gun, you know, I had the upper hand, and that's what it is, you know. And I don't glorify it. I don't want you to get it twisted. Like I'm just telling the reality of what an 11, 13, 15-year-old went through, man, and I'm still here. Like, this is my everyday life. I'm telling you, this ain't no movie. This is not a rap song. This is what you can talk to people and go on records and find.
Now, so how much time did they give you?
Well, they gave me 25 years. But I copped out. They said if I cop out, they'll suspend the attempt murder on the police. And they gave me 15 and suspended 10. They gave me 25, all suspended but 15.
But 15.
The 10 was still hanging over my head.
And 15 was for the murder of the guy.
It all was for the murder. Only thing was separate was the 5 years mandatory. That was for using the handgun in commission of a crime.
And you did the 15?
I did 11 on it straight.
11 straight, yeah.
From 15 years old to 26 years old straight.
Because you were still a minor, you were still a juvenile at that time.
They wave on you immediately once you get a murder.
Yeah?
Yeah, so you straight.
Tried as an adult.
At 15, I was over there with Anthony Jones. I was over there with grown men.
At 15?
At 15. They had us on T-section, but we still went to eat with them. S section was right here, so they hit our grills, they hit their grills. They used to come over there and talk to us and shit, you know? So, yeah. Dudes facing triple life.
Well, and how many juveniles would there be in, like, in your section?
I'm saying on average, T section had about 100 on this side, 100 on that side. I'd say about 300, about 150 each side.
And it wasn't
two floors.
Wasn't the federal? It was
a
federal?
No, it was state.
State, okay. Yeah. And what was that like? They, I mean, 11 years.
It was like the first week I went in there, I had to stab because dude said if I didn't, he was going to try me because I went to breakfast and he was like, And I was like, the fuck? He's like, the fuck? They're like, oh, no, he playing with you, man. You got to handle that. So from there, I had to own up to it, you know. Once I chopped him up, I was known as the Chopper. That's how I got the name Corleone, you know.
Corleone, like, Michael Corleone?
No.
Oh, Corleone.
Corleone, like C is for Carlos, O is for Okie, L is for Lamont, I is for Ike, like that.
Okay. Corleone, okay. So, and they didn't give you more time for those?
No one knows about these because they didn't have them.
Okay.
This was planned.
Okay.
This was everybody that stabbed me. I got stabbed 11 times in prison. So my plan was, look, I put the knife on my chest. This is my knife. I got stabbed in my chest, put the knife I was going to war with over the wound, and put the initials of everybody that I thought I was going to kill on my stomach because they tried to kill me. It's pronounced Co-Lion. They start calling me Co-Leon.
Co-Lion, okay, Co-Lion, became
Co-Leon. That's how it's pronounced. Yeah. Ronnie B starts saying Co-Leon, man. I don't like that Co-Lion shit.
So, obviously, I mean, that's a huge chunk of your life, that 11 stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And at that age, you know, time goes slow.
And I came home. I came home, and within two years, I was in front of Epic. I was in front of Def Jam, Universal Records. They had a bidding war on me for my music. Moved out my own house, got my own place. Had Robbie and a few guys come down with Raw Entertainment, and I was the most prominent artist in my city. After doing all that, and they violated me because a security guard at my show charged me with a second degree assault, verbal, and they gave me the whole 10 years over my head. This is the system.
Well, you did 11 years.
Did 11 years, came home for 2 years.
11, 2 years.
Got a record deal and all that. I came home November 2002.
Parole violation.
Yep, had a parole violation in 2005.
And they gave you 10 years for a parole violation.
For a second degree assault that was verbal.
A verbal assault.
I didn't even know second degree assault. You didn't have to put your hands on the person.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You can assault someone verbally like
yes, and it carries 10 years. Yes.
Whoa.
And they gave me the whole 10 years. At a, because of a rap show.
I mean, was...
At the security guard.
Was there some other thing happening here? They would be so harsh...
Because they knew who I was before I knew who I was. They knew this was coming. That's how deep I go with it. Yeah.
And so you did 10 years. When did you start rapping?
Well, I started rapping in prison. Well, I started rapping before prison, but I didn't take it serious. I had a little goofy rap song called Dr. King, and I did it. Dr. Martin Luther King was a very nice man. I did it at school, and I never really did it again. But in prison, dudes would rap, and I'd be like, that's bullshit. And everybody'd be like, yo, Co-Leon, get him. And I'd battle him, and I was so much better, and I just start writing and shit. Yeah.
And then, so in prison, you did a bunch of... You wrote a bunch of tunes. You wrote a bunch of songs in prison.
Yeah, in prison, I was so good that I had artists from uptown reaching out to me. Yeah, Brian McKnight, a few dudes that was actually stars, you know, heard about me, and yeah.
And you signed with Def Jam, you say? You signed.
Well, I didn't sign with anyone. I took the deal with Koch, inevitably, mainly because of AZ. Not because of Jim Jones. Jim Jones was the top A&R at the time, but I spent time with AZ, you know, the God, as he say. And spent a little time with Capone, made people say what they say about him. But aside from what he went through with Nori and what AZ went through with Nas, these some good dudes that's in bad contracts and bad deals. And they told me the best thing about Koch. AZ sat me down and said, man, look here, I don't have the buzz I had when I was with Nas and everything. He said, but since I left that situation and I'm with Koch, I sell 40,000 CDs a year and I get at least $9 off each of my CDs. And that made so much sense. Instead of selling 400,000 and getting 9 cents off, you sell 40,000 and get $9 off. It made so much sense. Yeah, so I stayed dealing with Koch until he locked me up again.
And then when you got locked up again,
April 21st, 2006, I'm putting up my posters for my CD sign release. Biggest show in the city is like a car show. Everybody talking about it. My baby mother calls me and said, the dude disrespects her. Me being me, you know, once she say my daughter was with her, I go out there. And needless to say, police end up saying I had a warrant for the assault, for the second degree assault.
You did 10 years.
Well, I did 5.5 on that 10 and came home on parole. I wasn't scheduled to be released till 2020, but I was the guy that they would hit my cell with a blood or a Muslim beef or a BGF and a civilian beef, and I'd go over the tail to Howard Union and squash the beef most times.
So you came out of prison then. Mm-hmm. And when did you begin this no shoot zone?
I began this in April of 2015.
Okay.
Literally moved on Lafayette off of Monroe, and the first 2 months I was there was 5 murders in 4 blocks. Yeah, it's Lafayette, Monroe, Landville, Fulton. It was 5 murders in 2 months. And I said, there's no way, being who I think I am, I'm going to live in my father's house and have these people scared to come out. I'm going to do something. What? I didn't know. So I'm going to do something, though. And before the Peyton, I start walking to the top members of the gangs that I knew. And I said, I want them to help me do something. And he said, what? I said, tell anybody in your gang on these 4 blocks not to shoot no one. He's like, what? Why them 4 blocks? I like, because 3 of those murders, I watched a young lady named Shanti's grandmother sit on the front and react to. Excuse me. Right? A young brother named Sterling was shot on Monroe. Shanti's grandmother jumped off the steps. 60-something-year-old woman ran in the house screaming. My stepmother, my father's wife, screaming, thinking it's one of her sons. I'm like, what the? Had to let that one go. It was just the first one. Not a week later, Marty, little young brother, rest his soul, get killed on McKean. That's right here. McKean is before you get to Fulton. Guess who on the front again? Broad daylight. Shanti's grandma. Boom. By the third one, by the time they shot the kid, Tyree, on her front, like right in front of her door, I'm thinking that the woman's so traumatized. Seeing 3 young men she watched as kids grow up, have their heads blown off in broad daylight, it took a toll on her. And she passed away last year. And that's how I walked up to these dudes. I said, man, what did her grandmother do in the 60s and 70s to deserve to see y'all slaughtering these young men she watched as kids? Nobody could answer me, not one. And that's why they said, well, what you wanna do, man? And first Black went with it. They said, yeah, okay, what's happening, man? Nobody don't shoot over there. And they listened, months passed. I went all the way on Emerson Avenue, Red. They was with it, yeah, big homie, because they remember me from the rap. You know, they wanna listen to me because I'm all right dude, you know? They know I'm not no cop. They know I never told nothing. They know I'm not in a gang. I don't choose sides. I'm straight God sent, you know? And they listen. And Blue moved their whole strip off of McKean so that they wouldn't have a beef there and it would affect it. So since March of 2015, there hasn't been a shooting on those 4 blocks.
Now you talk to, so you've created no shoot zones at certain points around the city, yeah?
Yes.
One of those 4 blocks there, and you got, we were driving along and I saw it, mm-hmm. even before Donut mentioned your name, I already noticed no shoot zone. I saw a couple of things around the place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? You create certain
areas? So it's 3 things that you can do to get a no shoot zone. It's a whole science that I formatted, right? Mm-hmm. If a young kid is shot in this city, and I'm not talking about a 15, 16, 17-year-old that's in a gang shooting people. I'm talking about 14 or under, or 15, 16, 17-year-old that's in school that don't do street stuff, right? Or a female. I'm coming to do a no-shoot zone. It's nothing. No one can say about it. Kill me or lock me up.
Mm.
If it's 2 shootings in a neighborhood in 1 week, so say from here to that corner, to that block, to that block. If it's 2 shootings within 1 week, they get a no-shoot zone. The third and only other way is if this whole community say, man, we're scared. I don't care if it's never been a shooting around here. They say, we're scared. It's getting close. And I have multiple people from this neighborhood requesting a no-shoot zone. You can get ended, bro, if it's great, die. Mm. If I have multiple people requesting a no-shoot zone, I'm coming no matter what.
Mm. How many have you set up now in the city?
Well, as 91 altogether completely, there's only 6 out of the city.
91
complete. It's 91 no shoot zones
in the Baltimore area.
It's 91 altogether. There's only 6 not in the city. It's 4 in Houston. There's 1 in Philly.
Oh, you created,
and 1 in DC.
You created okay. So 85 in the city.
In the city.
And 6 you've taken this to other places. Yeah.
Yeah. See, Houston came down to me. An artist named Rico King from Houston, and now we have 4 in Houston.
Now, when you created no shoot zones, you talk to now, like say like.
What you doing, boy?
In a neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not just example. So you create a no shoot zone, becomes like this street or something, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And
so
you say, okay, nobody can shoot on that street.
Right. So if this, let me give you a prime example.
You talk to the you just talk to.
I go to the people first before I put a painting up. And like I said, if it's the first 2 incidents, I just tell them I'm going to do it. The third incident, I ask them if they want it. Right? Either way, the way it is, I start with the shooters. Go straight to the gang members.
So how do you find out who they are?
I was locked up with him. I did 18 years. You know what I mean? I did 18 years. They all know me.
You just know right away.
If you're around a killer, you feel it, because I was a killer. Only one can't feel the presence of a killer is you didn't kill.
Yeah.
I could be sitting right here, and I can know a motherfucker never killed a fly, and I can tell a motherfucker that killed you 10 people, because I can feel it.
Yeah.
So for that, it's like I talk to them first. I go straight to them, fearless, man. I say, y'all need a no shoes on around here. They either buck or they go with it. Usually they go with it.
Do sometimes, have you had a situation where someone says,
get rejected? I've been rejected over 50 times. And the only time I accept rejection is if I'm coming for the neighborhood. I don't accept rejections in the case of Ayana or a kid. I don't accept rejection in the case of a female.
And if they reject, what can you do? What's happened then?
We're more powerful. We're more powerful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So afterwards, they've said, no, we're not going to respect that. What do you do? You say,
I don't put it up if they don't be with it, because then it would be an area that ends up having shootings.
Right.
That, you know, they told me not to put it up. I'd be a jackass.
Mm.
But in the case of Ayana and kids, I didn't even listen. I didn't even talk to them. I don't talk to them during those. I go and put it up, and they get in line. I say, get with it, get in line, or get left. That's the theme.
Now, how much? You're an organization now. You recruit other people.
That's what I did. I started. I put together a company right now, where as though they can operate without me. All I got to do is go and put the no shoot zones up. I have a president. I have a secretary. I have an assistant. I have a business associate. You know, I have. What I call them are mercenaries, whereas though if someone has a shooting in the no shoot zone, they go straight there. They only got here from it. Consequences.
And you get any support from the city or support?
No, the city hates it because I'm not ceasefires or safe streets or the other organizations that they know don't work, that are the fronts. I'm the one that works. I'm the one that there's 91 no shoot zones, only been shootings in 4 in 3 years, over 300 blocks. How can you not get behind that? It's astronomical.
So who supports you?
The community. Yeah. Like this queen here.
You get businesses or just people just saying like...
Usually businesses really don't get into it, man. Yeah. I tried. The most they'll let me do is put a no shoot zone banner or something up, and then they'll let the cops take it down. You know, like, it's not just about the paint. We had over 20 banners up, man. They took those down too after property owners told us we can put them up. That's how serious they are about silencing this message.
What inspired you? I mean... Did you say anything else? But you said like you came out and these shootings were happening, but was there something else inspiring you, some change in you that led you to the moment?
Because I shot. That was the only other thing.
Mm.
Other than me seeing how a neighborhood reacts to shootings, I looked back and said, damn, that must be how I had these neighborhoods back when I was younger. Shooting in these people's neighborhoods, running up on people, not thinking about the people in the house hearing the shots. Like being who I am, I've had to put my camera in a car where a kid brings over his head telling people, look, man, there's a video I deleted because I go live on all that shit. Like, this how y'all leave us. Girl ran out the car, ran straight to me in my arms after seeing a kid whole head blown off, you know? So, yeah, man, it's real with me. I can give you 91 names of 91 victims. I tell you every area they in. It's not a game with me.
No words.
Right now, the guns they're using commit the killings in Baltimore. What kind of guns are the most?
Well, mostly they're guns that we know were put here because there's no way we got them here. You got a lot of stretch clips and a lot of military guns, a lot of AR-15s, a lot of AKs. It's hard to get handguns now. Let them finish each other off. You only got to drop a bomb on us and shit. That's the sad thing.
What you think if there were less guns here, if there was a way of, because some people argue that like people are gonna find a way to fuck each other up.
No.
But do you think if there were less guns, it would make a difference?
I think if you take half of the guns away, right, you would take almost all of the murders away. It's too hard to kill with a knife. Ain't nobody going through all these different things to kill people unless you can run up with a gun. It's the fixation with guns, the movies, the, you know, the sound, the grip, the power. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Live by the gun, die by the gun, you see? That's how it works. You know what I mean? That's just...
You think it's too easy to kill with a gun?
It's too easy to kill with a gun, exactly.
You hit it right on the nose.
I mean, any 14-year-old.
And it's too gangster. Like it's gangster to kill with a gun. It ain't too gangster to kill with a knife. You don't got too many movies with knife killings.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't make it look too good. You feel me? You give angry people that have been through a lot things to hurt people, they're going to hurt people.
So, just to finish off, and it's been great, and there's a lot of things I could keep on chatting for hours about all this stuff, but just to finish off for right now.
Okay.
How do you feel about the future, and anything else? If I haven't said anything, feel free to raise it, but how do you feel about the future, both for this city, this community, and for yourself? I mean, can you imagine a Baltimore that has the same murder rate as Vermont, the same murder rate as New York, even?
Yeah. I'm beginning to create it. I have a vision of 200 no shoot zones by the end of this year. At the rate we're going, they can't stop it. It's getting more powerful. Even if the shootings were to try to catch up to the amount of no shoot zones, it would take too long. Because the whole city is not that crazy. It's not a coincidence that every time we had the shootings in those areas, I went and put in those shoot zones and they stopped. It's not a coincidence. 91 times, you know. Only 4 times that shootings happened, and I can tell you exactly why they happened and the reasons they happened and what happened to the people that did it. You know, like, it's real. It's so powerful, man. Wish you could see me in action, man, because, you know, I'm ready to go do the little kid for the 15-year-old kid, no shoot zone. You'll see how I pull up on.
Oh, when are you going to do that?
Now. I'm ready to go do it now.
Oh, really? Well, what do we got?
You can
do
it.
Yeah,
I'll roll
with
you.
All right,
let me pack up real quick.
Nice. Okay, that's it. Yeah, that was great. That was great.
He ain't tell you
that's it. Outro boom. That's the story of Coleon. The interview he gave me in 2018 before being shot dead by a police officer while assaulting a woman with a knife. In 2023, you got to the end, so you're obviously well interested in this subject, deep into it. So come out and check more of my work. Look into the world of organized crime, drugs, cartels, violence, and peace. Understanding and solutions on www.crashoutmedia.com. That's www.crashoutmedia.com. Subscribe for free. Take a look. Check it out. Or if you like it, if you want to help get more and better stuff out, then chip in with a $5 a month subscription and it makes it happen. All best. Outro boom.